In Raynham, Massachusetts, with Chris Kaczynski, Christopher Kaczynski, who kindly agreed to participate in the Oral History Project. And today is November 23rd, 2004, 2 days before Thanksgiving, and we're sitting in Chris's home. So, Chris, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, Chris, let me start by asking you how old you are, when you were born.
Born December 11, 1949. I'm 54, pushing 55.
55. And where were you born?
In Brockton.
And what kind of hemophilia do you have?
Hemophilia B, or Christmas disease.
And what severity, do you know?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Do you have any other chronic illnesses?
Quite a few.
Quite a few. All right, well then we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
All right. So let's start, Chris, by telling me, where did you grow up, and whom did you grow up with?
I grew up in Brockton with my family, my mother, father, and I had a total of 10 children in the family. I was one of the 10.
10 kids.
Right.
Okay. And were you the only one with hemophilia?
No, there was my two sisters and one brother were the only ones that didn't have it.
Your two sisters and one brother were the only ones that didn't have it. So
yes.
That means there were six boys that had hemophilia?
Yes. No, seven boys.
That's right. There were seven boys in the family.
Yeah.
Wow.
Junior and Bobby and Georgie, which I was had died before I was born, and as my count.
Start with the oldest to the youngest. Right, that would be helpful.
All right. There's oldest of everyone.
Yeah. Let me hear all the kids.
All right. There's my oldest brother was Junior or Godfrey. Godfrey Junior. Then there was Fabian, and then my two sisters, Helen and Catherine. And then Richie, and then Franny, and then me. JJ and Kevy, and Georgie was in there before I was born. He was born, I think, before Franny was born or after Franny was born.
And so seven of the 10 boys had hemophilia.
Yes.
I can't even imagine. So where you lived in Brockton, and did you live in a big house or did you live in the city? Where did you live?
We lived in a big farmhouse on a farm.
On a farm?
In Brockton. And my father had a farm. And he raised all kinds of animals, plus garden supplies. Garden, you know, tomatoes and corn and everything else. He had pigs for years. And then he also had turkeys at one time or another. And we worked hard. We worked in the fields, weeding, planting, picking vegetables. Then we had a farm stand out front that one day they decided to start selling some of the vegetables. And it built up into a pretty good business. And we worked hard for my father.
When you say
kids,
we, who was we?
Me and my brothers and sisters.
So the whole, family,
the whole family
worked on
this
farm?
Yes.
How did this work? How did you fare working on the farm with hemophilia? How did that...
Well, when we were lame and couldn't work, we would be in the house in bed or something, putting ice on a joint or whatever was bothering us. And the other kids that were feeling okay or working okay could carry on with their work.
Were you laid out much? Were you lame, as you say it, much?
Yeah, different periods. Go through periods of months that I'd be okay, and also go through periods of weeks and months to be lame and stiff and sore and not able to walk and things like that.
What do you remember, Chris? What do you really remember about when you were a kid with hemophilia?
I remember not being able to run. I couldn't run because my knee was stiff and sore.
You could never run?
I could when it wasn't stiff. I could run, I could skip, I could do everything good. But then as you got bleeds and joints that swollen up, and you couldn't straighten the leg, or you couldn't put pressure on the leg. You couldn't run, you couldn't walk sometimes. Sometimes I would hop in the house, I would hop on one foot to go to the bathroom, or whatever, just to get around. I got real good at hopping on one foot because the other leg would be sore and not straightened or whatever because of the bleeds in it. And it'd be like a knee or something, usually a knee or an ankle.
Do you remember mostly bleeds in your knee or ankle?
Yes.
That was not in your arms or?
I did have them in my elbows, yes, and my shoulders once in a while. Very painful, and once in a while in a hip. My father used to, when I had to go to the bathroom and I was real sore, he put me on a chair, just a regular type chair, and dragged the chair, tip it back and drag it on the two legs, you know, so you could go to the bathroom. We didn't have a wheelchair or anything. So he'd, you know, drag me on the chair. I'd be sitting on the chair, and he'd just tip it backwards and drag it into the bathroom, side of the toilet, and I'd go.
Stuff so like your that. Dad, you remember your dad
he
helping you
out. He helped us all the time, yeah.
What were your parents' attitudes towards all you boys having hemophilia?
They were worried. They were always worried and concerned. Many times when I was at the hospital, they always said stuff like, they don't know if I was going to make it through the night, and a priest had come in and given me my last rites many times.
Really?
Yes, I always had lots of problems. They couldn't stop the bleeding, and they just keep transfusing me. And they'd give you plasma. They did not have any clotting factors or anything like that, so they'd load you up with plasma, and that would sometimes help.
What was that like when you got last rites, or your parents said, "Oh my God, we don't"?
Well, I was kind of young, and I didn't really know the difference. I was sick at the time, but whatever they said, I didn't worry about because I was just too young to take it in, to understand it, I think.
I see. Did you worry about yourself a lot as a kid?
No, not really.
Not really?
No, I just wanted to, do things. And Father wouldn't let us do many things that, you know, he'd say, "You can't do this, you'll get hurt. You can't do that, you'll get hurt. You can't go do, you know," he couldn't, like, play and fight with other kids and do the stuff normal kids would do a lot of times because they'd be afraid we'd get hurt. And we would come back hurt from different things. But we used to hoss around amongst ourselves and get hurt anyways. So he said if he kept us working and busy, we'd stay out of trouble. We wouldn't be getting hurt so much. So that was his idea to try to help.
So how did he keep you home? What did that mean? Just by keeping you busy working?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we had friends, you know, that would come in and stuff, but we wouldn't usually go to anybody's other friends' houses or anything like that because, I don't know, he just didn't want us to hoss around and get hurt, get a bleed, or get bruised up and stuff. And he'd always say, when other kids would come to our house or something, he'd say, "Take it easy with them. Don't bruise them up. Don't, they're bruises. They bruise easy and stuff."
Is that what he'd call you, a bruiser?
Yeah, he used to say we'd bruise easy, yeah. Yeah.
What about your mom? How did she handle having, so many kids and then so many boys with hemophilia?
I don't know. She used to worry, and she used to say prayers all the time. And she used to do a lot of cooking, though. She cooked a lot. And that was, you know, she worked in a factory in different places, and she also cooked a lot. And I don't know. She was just, she's a good mother. She always took good care of us.
Were you diagnosed with hemophilia? Did you know what it was?
No.
You didn't?
I didn't know at first, no.
What do you remember about that? How did your parents understand what was going on?
Well, I think the doctors told them what it was, and I guess they did understand, yeah.
But you didn't?
No, I didn't understand it at first, not when I was younger.
What did you, do you remember what you used to think?
I just couldn't understand why, you know, a leg all of a sudden would get stiff and swollen and I couldn't move it. And I'd be outside trying to walk and I'd say, "I can't, what's the matter?" I just didn't understand why it wouldn't work, the leg wouldn't work, or bleed, or why all of a sudden I woke up in the morning, I can't step on my foot, it hurts.
And did anybody explain it, or?
Yeah, they explained it, but I still didn't.
Didn't make sense.
No, they said, "Oh, you know, you're hemophiliac. Means you bleed in the joints." And I, you know, well, yeah, I'm not a doctor, so how could I take that in and understand it?
Right, right.
I just knew other kids were walking around and didn't have any problems, and And it was odd that, you know, you didn't understand why.
What about your other brothers? Did you all sort of, were you the same about it? Did you all have the same experience about it?
We had the same experiences, but I can't speak for them because I'm not sure what they thought about things.
Yeah. Did you guys ever talk about it together? What's going on or why do we have this?
No, we just used to say, oh, I'm lame, how's your leg, this, that. You know, we just, I don't know. We used to put cold cloths on our legs when they got sore at night. I used to always wrap them up, but I'd take a face cloth to get a nice, ice cold water and put it on, and we'd relax you for the night. Stuff like that. And we didn't, like I say, discuss it, though. We just would say, you know, how's your leg today? Any better? Feeling any better? And like that.
So all you remember for treatment when you were young was putting white cold cold cloth on.
Yeah, and ice packs. If we hurt ourselves, like if we know we banged ourselves right away, my father would say, get ice, and we'd automatically put ice on it and keep it cold and get off it. And that would usually, well, slow it down on occasions. Sometimes we wouldn't get a bleed, but most of the time we did.
And so what would happen if you got a bleed?
It would swell up, and that would mean you couldn't be on that joint for days, weeks even sometimes. Yeah.
Before. Well, what about school? What happened with your education?
We had home teachers. I went to school, a couple of my brothers went to school, and I went to school, but I couldn't walk, I couldn't take it. So they put me at, the teacher would come in 5 days a week, I think it was, for a couple hours a day. We had homeschooling.
For how long did you have homeschooling?
I graduated through high school with it.
Really?
Yep.
So you never really
no
went to school?
Not really.
Was that true for the rest of the kids?
JJ and Kevin and I think her brother Franny too, yeah.
Were you in line?
Well, I'm third from the bottom.
Third from the bottom.
Right, I mean, Kevin's the youngest, Jeffrey, then me.
So all of you were homeschooled, and when you could, you worked in the farm, and when you couldn't, you were laying in bed.
Right. Or sitting around or whatever, but we couldn't walk. We couldn't do much. Well, we if we could get out to the stand where we sold the vegetables, we could get a chair and sit down and wash tomatoes or do something, even with a bad leg when we could, just so we'd be busy and try to help. You know, even if we had a sore arm, we'd use the other arm and do whatever we could one-handed, just so that we kept busy and took our mind off our troubles, of our pain.
Uh-huh. So the attitude wasn't, oh, poor thing.
No. No, I'd put a sling on and get my arm comfortable. And if I wasn't almost crying, that means I was okay. And I'd just go and do whatever I could, one arm or whatever. And the same way with the leg. If you could walk on it, you would. And if you couldn't, you wouldn't. You'd hop around or whatever.
And you just wait until you could, and
until,
that would be
wait
that.
Wait until it improved, yes. Then after the bleed went down, you try to walk and keep walking so that the leg would get back to getting stronger. But we didn't have any physical therapy or anything in those days. So our joints never really got real good after they were injured. They would keep getting injured and never really had any physical therapy.
What about doctors and nurses? Were they around when you were young?
Well, we only saw them really when we went to the hospital.
Okay. And when would you go to the hospital?
When there was something more serious, like bleeding. More like actual wounds. Like I got cut in the head one time, and I was bleeding. And another time, I fell back in a chair and cut my mouth and was bleeding and stuff. And we went in for those reasons. I had internal bleeding once or twice inside me. A bleeding ulcer and something else when I was young. And I was in there for that, and they were flushing me. They had put a tube in my side, flushing cold water inside to heal me up and drain me and stuff. They all did all kinds of stuff.
Where did you go when you went to the hospital?
Brockton Hospital, the Brockton.
Yeah, and what was it like in the hospital when you were a kid?
I hated the place.
Why?
Because I wanted to get home and run away from the hospital. All I was doing was making plans to run home. And I said, if I run home, my parents will bring me back. That was my biggest promise. They'll bring me right back here. So I never ran home. planned it.
Why did you think of running home?
Because I didn't like the place. I wanted to be home. I just wanted to be home with the family and everybody. I was lonesome. I didn't like being there.
Because you were there by yourself usually?
Yeah. I stayed there for 30 days at a time, a minimum.
For 30 days at a time?
30 days at a time was the minimum, yes.
Was the minimum?
Yeah.
Did that often happen, that you were there for a month at a time?
Yeah. It was a minimum of a month. A lot of times it was longer.
And were you alone in a room? Or?
Yeah, I usually had one room, one person to a room. I was usually by myself.
What were the doctors and nurses like?
They were good to me. They were real nice. Oh, they were sweet. They always liked me. They all liked me. I got along good with all of them.
Yeah, but you just felt so left out because you were separated from your family.
Right.
Were all your other brothers in and out of the hospital like you were?
Some were. Not, I don't think I was in there a lot more than some of them. I don't recall, though. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was like different times, so it's hard to know which ones. But yeah, they were in there too.
What do you remember? Were you like a sad kid? Were you a depressed kid? I mean, how'd you handle this emotionally?
I was always smiling and happy. I was always had a smile on my face and sort of, I don't know. I was always like joking around and always, you know, I wasn't serious about things. I don't know, not that serious.
So even though all this stuff was happening, you were able to somehow keep a smile on your face?
Yeah, because you only thought
about... What do you make of that, Chris? Did that have anything to do with a family attitude, or do you think it was just how you were born? What do you think?
I don't know. I think family has a lot to do with it, you know.
Tell me about that.
Well, we had a lot of fun, me and my younger brothers. We always horsed around, did everything together, the three of us, me, Jeffrey, and Kevin. And, you know, we hung out together and...
Mostly you younger guys.
Yes.
Why? The older guys were too much older?
Yeah, they would be, they were just with themselves. They were too mature for us, or whatever you want to call it. They didn't hang out with us. I mean, we used to go down the woods and go hunting. We called it hunting with homemade bows and arrows and things. And, you know, we never shot anything because we had strings and sticks and things. We walked around the woods, walked along the rivers and stuff. See what was going on. We take hikes and stuff.
So you still had a sense of adventure, even though your mother and father were always saying, be careful, don't do this, don't do that.
We used to go in the winter on the snow and the ice and on the pond and slide and go down the hill on sleds. And we used to get hubcaps, two hubcaps. And we'd sit in one, put our feet in the other. We'd bring our bags underneath us. And we'd slide down the hills and stuff.
And your parents didn't forbid you to do that?
No.
Yeah. Even though they knew you might get hurt?
Yeah, we did sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. But...
But it was hard to keep us from not doing stuff, I guess.
Yeah. And you didn't want to not do... I mean, you wanted to do stuff,
even
though you knew you could have a bleed.
Oh, yeah. The risk wasn't there. You didn't worry about it. You just tried not to happen. Tried not to bang your leg into something or fall or do things that would hurt you. So you would try to avoid it. But it wasn't always avoidable.
But it didn't stop you from sledding or doing things that it would be so easy to get hurt with.
No, we used to try to slide and ski and all that stuff, but, you know.
So in a funny way, even though your parents said be careful, they gave you the freedom to...
Yeah, when we were out of sight, we did what we wanted. They couldn't watch us all the time either. I mean, if they caught us doing something, they saw us doing something bad, they probably... would have stopped us. They did stop us. I'll say, hey, that's enough of that. Come on, knock it off. Get home.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Did they ever get mad at you when you got a bleed?
No.
Never did?
No, they always were good to me and always said, oh, take it easy. Don't do this again. You know, you got to be more careful. That's all. But they never picked on me or blamed me for...
Never did?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
They understood it pretty good.
You had said to me that your mom prayed. Well, tell me about that.
Well, every week she'd kneel on the bed and say her prayers with the rosary for us.
Did faith and religion play a big part in their lives or in your life?
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, they made us go to Sunday school, and we had even home teachers come out for Sunday school to make us make our first communion and all that stuff.
So you were Catholic?
Yes.
And what about today, Chris? Is this an important part of your...
Oh, yeah.
Tell me.
Well, I make sure I try to pound into the head of the kids here, everybody. We took all our children and made them, you know, go through the first communion and make confirmation and all that. And we just hope they continue with the religious. And whenever we can, they go to church. And I used to go when I could. I haven't gone that many times, but I always had trouble sitting down and getting up in the pews because of my legs. I'd sit down, then I got to stand up, then you got to sit down, and it was hard to do.
Yeah.
Then the priest said, you don't have to do that. But I still, it was hard for me to get into church and stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of times with bad legs and stuff.
Did church, was that a strength for you as far as coping with
I've always believed that when, you know, when things got better, I prayed harder and said more prayers.
You always believed what?
I've always believed God's going to help me. Because I believe in God. I'm religious. The fact that I was taught that way, to believe. And my grandmother told my mother, says, better to believe than not believe. Says, you know, well, what do you think? Is it, you know, is there anything to it? She says, it's better to believe than not believe. Mm-hmm. And I've always believed that was the right answer.
Mm-hmm. So your memory of your childhood was, you know, oftentimes being in, you know, sort of in bed or in the hospital with a bleed with cold compresses or out helping or running around when you could.
Well, we had, me and my brothers horsed around a lot. We took the tractors. When my father wasn't home, we drove around, raced around. We had BB guns we had gotten. We had fun shooting BB guns and things. We had fireworks, and we had a lot of fun blowing off fireworks and doing things that my father would have, you know, not approved of. But he'd go to pick up my mother or something like that. Wouldn't be home. We knew the time and how much time we had to huss around, and we'd take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it wasn't just a sad thing all the time. We had a regular life, except when we were lame.
So you had a regular life except when you were lame.
Right.
Yeah. So you didn't feel that different then?
No.
You didn't?
No, even today I don't feel that different, that I'd do anything that I could. The only thing that held me back is the physical part of things.
Mm-hmm. But mentally you felt
mentally,
no different.
Mentally, no, right.
Interesting. I'm fascinated by that in some ways because I always wonder, how come, you know, what do you make of it? That
right.
kids were, that you didn't feel different with being in the hospital for a month at a time or your
right.
legs. Why not, do you think?
I don't know. Just the fact that you're born with whatever you're born with, and that's part of it, I guess.
Uh-huh. So it's more that you were just born with it, and it's who I am? And
right, and I've got to deal with it. And am I going to sit and cry in my beer all day, or am I going to just carry on and do everything? I got married, I had kids, I did everything I could. I raised plants and did some landscaping when I was younger, and I worked with my other brother driving a truck and doing a few other things. And I always, you know, tried to do as much physical stuff as possible. Even though my legs and joints were weak, I still kept going and trying to do, you know, whatever I could, and just like anybody else. I mean, I know it was limited, but I still try to get around the limitations whenever I could.
So you didn't really focus on what you couldn't do. You focused
no.
more on what you could do.
I tried to do everything. I used to would try to accommodate myself differently. Like if I got down, I'd work on my car or something. I'd have a box or something so I could sit on the box and lower myself down to get under the car because I couldn't get up and down like somebody else on their knees, bend their knees and do this. But I always tried to do it because as long as my hands were working, which they always worked better than my legs, I always tried doing things. Fix things, build things, did a little carpentry work when I could. I used chainsaws and cut firewood and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's dangerous, but I'm very careful and try to get in a good position before I did anything so that, you know, I wouldn't take a chance on getting hurt if I could.
What do you remember about treatment and the changes of treatment? You know, what do you remember about that?
Well, there was no treatment, really, for years, except, like I said, the plasma and the blood.
What do you remember about the plasma and the blood?
They'd give you a lot of it. When I was emergency, which I usually went in, my father would come in and give a pint of blood because he was the same type as me.
And so he'd give blood for you?
Yes. When I went in on an emergency, usually he was there to give a pint of blood to get me started. And I usually would have 30 pints of blood at a stay. That wasn't common. I mean, uncommon. That was... Then they would give me plasma, and then finally I'd improve and go home.
And were you strapped down with IVs a lot?
Well, they put
a
board.
What was that like?
Yeah, it was very uncomfortable. I hated needles. Couldn't wait for them to come out. They'd put a board down, then tape you to the board, the arms, and put in the needles and stuff, and you stuck there for quite a while.
How long?
Well, for the duration of the hospital stay, usually.
You mean you'd have needles in you the whole 30 days?
Yeah.
And how often would the blood or plasma be dripping into you?
Almost every day, some days, sometimes. Most of the time I was there being treated. Once I wasn't treated, I was usually well enough to go home.
I see. So you remember just lots of blood going in or
right.
plasma going in. That's
right.
what you remember. Anything right. else that you remember as far as treatment?
No.
Yeah.
I remember them doing quick cut downs where they couldn't get a vein, so they'd cut across it, cut across your vein, and then they could put a needle in it, because otherwise they couldn't find my veins. I had such tiny veins, they had a problem with them all the time. Then I have scars on my legs where they had to cut them open to do the same thing. I still got the scars.
Did that hurt?
At the time, it didn't. I don't remember. I was a little kid. I was young.
Yeah.
I don't
Tell
even
me
remember
about
the age.
Pain. Did you have much pain?
Oh, yeah. I had pain that, I'd moan and cry all night with a shoulder or a big knee or ankle that would swell up. You'd put it down like you'd get comfortable by putting it on the floor or something as you're sitting. Instead of putting it in the bed, you'd be sitting on the edge of the bed. And the foot would swell up because of the circulation. No, then it would be sore, and it would take days to go away.
How did you handle the pain?
Well, once in a while, my mother would call the doctor, and we'd get some codeine, and that would help. It would knock you right out, though. It was real strong. And that was like a very hard drug to deal with, and you wouldn't get it very often. And we wouldn't use it that often either, because it would only be if you really... We were in enough pain that would make you practically cry. It was hard when we were in pain like that. I used to watch my brothers, a couple of my brothers used to get shoulders that were really sore, and they had the same trouble with their shoulders, really moaning and groaning and suffering, holding the hand, holding the sore shoulder, the hand of the sore shoulder with their other arm, because if you let it hang, it'll hurt the shoulder. So you sort of do this, try to put a sling. You can't get the sling long enough or short enough to be in the right position to be comfortable. So you end up holding it with your hand so that it'll relieve some of the pain. But it was hard.
It was hard.
Yeah. When you were in pain and injured, it was hard. But you didn't dwell on that. You try to dwell on the better stuff, the good things, the things that you like to do. We used to eat, we used to like eating. My father and mother would both cook food, and we'd have, you know, all homemade food, and it was real good. We'd have potato pancakes, French fries, American chop suey, everything, just you name it. Polish food, galumpkis and all that stuff, pierogies and stuff. It was good.
Do you remember your parents' reaction when you guys were in pain? What would they do?
They would, like, you could see it in their eyes and in their face that they were distressed, but they wouldn't let on that, you know. They said, well, what can I get you? What do you want? Want some oranges? Want this? Want that? Anything they could try to help you. Want a wet face cloth? Want an ice pack? You know, they tried to do anything they could for you. But it was in their face that they were suffering too.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't talk about it.
No.
They just were active in trying to figure out how to help.
Right, they didn't let on like it was bothering them.
Are you glad for that, or do you wish they had?
No, I think they handled it the way it had to be handled, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they were, you know, saying more, then maybe we would feel it worse. It wouldn't make us feel any better, put it that way.
Yeah.
It was probably better that they didn't do it that way.
Do you think you have a different relationship with pain than people who didn't grow up with hemophilia?
Yeah.
What is it, do you think? What is your relationship with pain?
That I can take more pain than anybody that I know of.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think your tolerance is enormous?
Very, yeah. I can take a lot of pain before it makes me cry or makes me sad enough to break. But I know I've dealt with it many times without no pills, no Tylenols, no nothing for years, and got through lots of bleeds and lameness and injuries and, you know, and took nothing for pain. And I still don't take much for pain.
How come?
I just don't want it. If I think I really need it, I would take it. But it has to be excruciating before I would take any.
Because somehow you know how to, you'll get through it? Or?
Well, it's because I think that when every day you're walking and your knee is a little sore and this elbow has never been right and the shoulder still hurts, that you've been living with this pain. Anyways, every day some pain. So you're already tolerant to pain. Like you can handle pain more because now this new pain isn't much more than you've already been dealing with every day. That's the way I feel, that, you know, like they said, I'm stiff. Every day I get up and I say, I'm stiff. Yeah, and I start walking, I loosen up, I'm okay. My legs are still the same sore legs and everything, but I'm moving them, getting them going, and I'm doing better.
Did the pain ever scare you?
No.
Never did?
No.
You were just, this is it, okay.
Yeah, it would make you hurt and make you sad and stuff. Wish it would get better. I mean, I cried. I had times when I was sore enough with joints that I did cry when I was a kid, but eventually I avoided all that. I don't know, I can have the pain now and the same amount of pain won't do that to me anymore, but it'll still be tough to deal with.
Yeah. So anyway, you were telling me about the treatment. What do you remember about it? So you remember sort of getting these cuts in your vein and
yes.
treated with blood or plasma
right.
and being in the hospital forever.
Right.
Then what do you remember?
Then all I remember is me and my brothers decided we were told to go to Children's Hospital around 1969. And they said they had factor. There was a Dr. Kevy there, Sherwin Kevy. And we met him and he said, yeah. He says, we can help you. You gotta give us a chance and everything. And we said, what about the coverage? We weren't sure we would be covered because it was an expensive product and all this. And he said, don't worry about it. Somehow we were covered. And they start giving us the factor, and we would come into the children's hospital once a week or more if we had a bleed and get a factor 9 infusion and then go home. And then
you mean you come in once a week whether you needed it or not?
Right.
You just come in once a week.
Right.
So this was in 69.
Right.
And you were born in 54?
49.
So you were 20 years old by this time.
Right. And then we started getting it at the Cardinal. They gave it to us to bring to the Cardinal. And we start going to the Cardinal for infusions.
Is that a local hospital?
Yeah, it's the Good Samaritan now, but it was the Cardinal Cushing in those days. And then finally, the next step was to have home treatment, to take it home and, you know, infuse ourselves. We were taught at the Children's how to do it and stuff, and we did well that way.
Was it a big difference to be getting factor?
Yes.
Tell me what it was
like.
Well,
we didn't get it as lame as often. And we could, if we could get to a start of a bleed before it went into full bleed, we could stop it. And that was, you know, and I'd go months at a time without a bleed or anything with the factor. Months.
What was that like for you?
A lot better. Very much better.
Could you believe it?
No. No, and I was able to move a lot easier. Do a lot more things with a lot more, you know, ease.
Yeah. So this didn't really come to you till your 20s.
Right.
You know, and for your younger brothers when they were in their teens.
Right.
And what about your older brothers?
Well, they never had it. They never, well, my oldest brother, Godfrey, did get it, yeah. And Franny was the next one who had hemophilia. He got it also.
What about the other ones?
Which ones?
Well, there were seven of you, right?
Yeah, but Georgie and Bobby had passed away.
How did Georgie and Bobby pass away?
Georgie had hit his head. He was like 4 years old. This was before I was born. And he banged his head and he got a big bruise on his head. And they said they touched it and it was blood came out. They took him to the hospital and it was too late. And then my brother Bobby was like 23 years old. This was in 1962. And he was driving a tractor or something. And I don't know, somehow one of his kidneys stopped bleeding. He went to the hospital and same thing. He couldn't stop the bleeding internally and he had died.
So what was that like for you as a kid to have two of your brothers die from hemophilia?
Well, my youngest brother, Georgie, I wasn't around.
So they didn't talk about, your parents didn't talk about Georgie?
No. Well, they talked to him and they were sad every time they told me, you know, how it happened and everything. They had, I don't know, said he banged his head on a cellar door or something and they put ice on and stuff and then they said a day or so later it was bleeding and took him to the hospital and that was it. Mm. But my brother Bobby, you know, he used to work around the farm, do everything. I missed him when that happened. I was sad. Yeah, I was always, that was the first time I actually saw a death in the family, a death of anybody actually, close enough to know what even death meant. I didn't even know.
How
I was
old
like
were you
13.
When
13.
It
was about 13.
Did it make you afraid for yourself?
Yeah, then I start thinking that, you know, how much time have I got left? What would happen to me if something like that happened? I always had that in my head that, you know, will I live to be 20 or 30 or 40? I kept saying, I hope I live to this age. Then when I reached that age, I'd say, I hope I live to this age. And like that, I did. I was concerned because, I don't know, that death put a thought in my head that, you know, that I'm in a dangerous position.
So you realized that this could be, that this could kill you, really.
But I didn't know that until, like I say, until after he had died.
Right.
And I realized what death was.
Did that change your behavior at all as a kid?
Not really.
Did it make you more frightened or more cautious?
No, but it made me always have that in my head that I hope, you know, that I lived more. And I'd say, well, I hope I make it to the 20s. And I'd say, well, when I got to my 20s, I'd say, oh, I'll make it till I'm 35. Then I'd say, I made it till 35. Gee, I'm still going. I hope I keep making it.
How about, are all your other brothers still alive?
Yeah.
They are?
Well, JJ and Kevin, and my brother Richie, who doesn't have it, he's alive. And my two sisters. But Franny died, and Junior Godfrey died, 90 and 91.
Okay. Yeah. What about work, Chris? Were you able to work in your life with all these bleeds? I hear you worked in the farm as a kid, but when you became a young adult, what happened?
In 1971 or so, I turned about 21, I think, and I went to work for a bakery, and I made dough. I was a dough maker. I loaded flour into a mixer all night long and worked. I did that.
That must have been heavy physical work.
It was very heavy. I was unloading pallets, 100-pound bags of flour all night, like 80 bags. And I was in good shape, though, in those days. But I was young and strong, and I wasn't too bad.
Uh-huh. And there was factor at that
point. Right, yeah. And then I went from there to another bakery to deliver bread, and I delivered bread for 2 years, drove all over Quincy and Boston and everywhere, and Needham, Newton, and all that, all the surrounding towns, delivered Italian bread for 2 years. So I stayed pretty busy.
Were you ever worried about telling people that you had hemophilia and how they'd react to you or treat you?
I never told them it because most people wouldn't understand it. I would just tell them, you know, they'd say, how come you're lumpy? What's the matter with your leg? I'd say, I heard it this way or I heard it that way or something. I never really told them. When I went to the work at the bakeries, I did tell them I had hemophilia and that I could get bleeds and stuff, so they would know, but I never told most people.
Did anybody, if you did disclose it, do you remember ever having any particular reaction to it? Either by kids, did kids tease you?
Yeah, when we were kids, they would tease us and stuff, you know, say, oh, bleeder, you're a bleeder, or something like that. They'd say to us, you know, because they would say, you're a bleeder, you're a hemophilia. Oh, that's a bleeder. And they would say, oh, bleeder, a bleeder, stuff like that to you. And, you know, wasn't nice. We didn't like it. I didn't like it. They did it to me. So I didn't ever tell anybody that I was a hemophiliac. Most people, I didn't tell them. They'd say, how come you're limping? And I'd tell them something else.
Did it affect your dating or your love life to have all these bleeds or issues? And
it,
how did that work?
Yeah, it slowed me down. I couldn't get around as quick as I would like to and stuff. And I don't know, I was just slow. Shy. I was very shy, too. So it took time.
Did you date much? Or?
No, not too much.
Yeah. So what happened? How did you meet your wife? Or what happened?
Well, I went into Children's Hospital, and I had my teeth done because I had bad teeth. And I had most of them removed, and I met Janet.
At Children's?
Yeah, and she was a nurse's aide there. And that's how we met. We've been together for 33 years.
Oh, my goodness. So you didn't have to tell her you had hemophilia. She
knew.
No,
she knew. But she understood. And I went over it with her even before we married and told her, you sure you want to go through with life with me? Because of as the problems, as I can't take you out dancing, I can't do this, I can't do that. I says, I'm going to tell you right up front. Don't expect too much of me. I said, there's a good chance, you know, that I'll have problems further down the road, too. But she didn't mind. She didn't care. She understood, so.
So you were very honest with her about
right.
your own concerns
right.
about what it might be like to marry you.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I couldn't get rid of her.
So how old were you when you got married?
21.
21?
Right.
Wow. Was she the first person you really dated?
Yes.
She was?
Right.
Okay. Did you worry about children?
No, we didn't. The doctors had said that the female would be the carrier, and there's a good chance, you know, your kids will be fine. But the girls could be carriers again.
Mm-hmm. So how many kids did you end up having?
Five.
You have five kids?
Yeah.
And what, boys, girls?
Two boys, three girls.
Two boys, three girls.
Yeah.
Okay. And did they know about hemophilia?
Well, not at first, but now they do, yeah.
They do now. How old are they now?
Well, they're from 33 down to 20, 21.
And do any of them have kids with hemophilia?
No.
None of them do?
Well, there's only two children so far. Two grandchildren and the two girls, but they don't have hemophilia.
Were they tested?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But they seem to be healthy.
Were they worried about it? Did they talk about it with you, or...?
No, not really.
Not
they're,
really.
They're not, they understand it, but they're not, like, worried about it.
Yeah. Do you have concerns about having a grandchild with hemophilia?
Well, no, I'm saying we're into the age where we keep going forward and forward and forward. That when I was born, they didn't have much. Now here, there's quite a few years later. They get a lot more now than they ever had. And there's all kinds of options. And they say they can even do it before a kid is born to find out if they do have hemophilia.
Right, sure.
So they got all those options that
mm-hmm.
can be
So you considered. Don't think it should be something to prevent someone from going ahead and having kids, even if that child might have hemophilia?
Right.
How come?
Because a life is still a life. A family wants to have children, and it makes your life when you have children. They're a good part of your life. Without them, my life would be real dull, real. No, really, as you get older, you know, you like to have somebody around, and they're good kids and, you know, good family.
But given what you've been through with hemophilia, did you ever worry, oh, I don't want anybody to have this disease?
No, I would not like to see anybody ever have this disease. But like I say, there's a good chance that if someone had a child now, they'd have a better chance at having a much better life than I did.
Yeah.
With the treatment and things they've got, and maybe, who knows, in a few years it could even be even better. So that's why I'd say, no, I wouldn't advise them to have one if they knew. But at the same time, they'd have to make that decision and work it out. I wouldn't be 100% against it. I'd just say that you'd have to go the way you think, but they would have a better chance at having a better life than I did.
Mm-hmm. Did you experience that a little bit yourself with the factor? I mean, did
you?
Oh,
yeah.
You did.
If I had factor probably when I was born, or, you know, when I was young, I wouldn't have went through half the things I went through. I've been treated quicker and healed up quicker and had a much easier life.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, it would have made a big difference early in my years.
Let's talk about the 80s.
Yeah.
When that all came around.
Right.
You know, and the HIV and then ultimately the Hep C. What do you remember about that whole period?
Nothing much. That they said there was a big problem coming up.
Who said?
The doctors and the Hemophilia Association said, oh, we're starting to hear these people are getting sick, and we didn't understand what it was. Then they said, there's something wrong with the factor. And we called the Hemophilia Association, and I don't know what doctors I talked to, and they said the same thing. They said, if you came in with a bleed or an injury, we would give you the factor.
Yeah. They were saying, if you get a bleed, we're going to give you factor.
Right. They would say, well they still would give you the factor, knowing the chances of something that they weren't even sure what it was, what illness it was. Or they didn't even have a name for the HIV yet. They didn't really, I don't think they called it HIV at first. They didn't have a name for it. And there was a lot of, I guess, started out with the gay people getting it and getting real sick and dying. And then they realized that some of the blood had came from some of the people that were gay and had this disease. But they didn't know all this. They didn't know very much about it. But they said, keep taking the factor. They said, if you came in, we would give you the factor and not worry about the risk of getting this disease. Because they didn't even know what the disease was or if they could treat it or not. But they weren't concerned with it.
Who's they? Who were you?
Well, was it
were you children's at that point? You were like 30 by this time.
No, I was over at the Brigham.
You were at the Brigham by this time.
Yes. But it was the New England Hemophilia Association that I used to get a newsletter from, and I had called them. And I had called a couple of doctors that were listed on there too. And they said the same thing. They said, we don't know a lot about everything, but we would say, keep taking the factor. Don't stop taking it. They figured the risk was, I don't know, minimal.
So then what happened?
Well, then, I don't know. Around 80, I guess it was, they said 86, but it was like, I said 86, it was 83, they said. And that I got up with night sweats and stuff. And I went into the Brigham. And they took the test and said I was HIV positive around the fall of 86. Then around 1990, started on AZT and other things. And then a few years later it changed, and I was taking the cocktail a few years ago. Now I'm not on any of it. My numbers went down, they took me off it, so I'm not on any of the viral meds right now.
You're not on any of them?
No, not one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about the Hep C? When did that come in?
Well, see, I don't even know. They said I had it. Then they said my body had cleared it. So I don't even know. But they say I was exposed to it and still in me a little bit. But I don't know much about it, and I don't know when I got it. Oh, you know, really, not sure.
How did you handle it when you heard that you had these infections? What did you think?
Well, I started saying a lot more prayers as soon as I found out I was HIV positive, and I figured I only had a few years to live based on all the stories going on and how people were dying. And I just kept saying prayers. Then, like I said, I had started taking the AZT around 1990, and they kept checking my numbers, and they kept staying in decent shape, and so I started believing, you know, things are doing better, and that was it. And but like I said, I've been saying lots more prayers since then than
prayers,
I ever did before.
Prayers for what? What would you pray
prayers
for?
Prayers to live, prayers to be healthy, prayers to stay with my family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did your kids know about all this?
I didn't tell them right away.
You didn't?
No, slowly they learned. I didn't want to scare them. We're afraid to tell people I had it because at first everybody seemed to be prejudiced against anybody with HIV. If you told them, they would like blackball you, you know what I mean? They'd talk about you. I had my neighbors I never even told when I lived in West Bridgewater because same thing. I would hear them talking and saying, oh, these people with HIV, this and that, and they weren't nice about it. And I said, the minute if they found out I had it, they'd have nothing to do with me. Because that's what I figured, so I never told them. That's why I never bragged, not bragged, but spread the news about it to anybody.
Did you ever want to meet other people with hemophilia and HIV? No, why?
I don't know, I'm not one of those pushy persons or a person that looks around for friends all the time. I'm just like shy. I like being by myself. I like my lifestyle. I don't interact with a lot of people. Just a few people I know here and there. I meet, we talk, we do this and that, but not many.
Did you ever feel it would be helpful or something you'd want to meet another person with hemophilia, or not that you didn't have enough in your own family?
I got my own family with them.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Well, I knew a kid lived down the street that had hemophilia. He has passed away since then, but I mean, we knew his father and stuff, and we used to go over to his house and play cards and stuff. And they knew we had hemophilia, and he knew it, and he had it, and so it was no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But that was about the only friend
mm-hmm.
that I knew that had it.
Has it been something, are you close to your brothers today?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah.
Is it something you guys ever sat around and talked about, or?
Not really. We complained about it. We said one time, yeah, we're all probably going to die from this, you know, this is mad, and, you know, just talking in general one time. We said that to each other, yeah, we all got it, we're all going to die from it, so what's the difference? And just keep going, you know, that's about all we said about it.
Do you think it made you closer because you all had hemophilia or not?
Not really.
Yeah.
I think we're just close because of the family.
Yeah.
We did stuff together, and we didn't have outside friends as much as other kids, so we were our own friends.
So it sounds like as much as you had to deal with it physically, with pain or laid up or the hospital, it didn't spend a lot of time being part of your psychological self.
No, it didn't block off things. The whole world went around, and I was involved in anything else that I felt like. I'd read books, I'd build things, I played with the garden, I always had a garden in my yard and stuff. Did the things I wanted to do whenever I could. And that wasn't top priority. My health was up to a point, but I didn't dwell on it. And like my kids all know that, yeah, I can't walk too far, I can't do this, but I never could do 100% of everything that other people do. But we still always went to places. I always took the kids to the parks, the Riverside and Rocky Point Park and Rhode Island and stuff every summer. And I'd walk as far as I could, sometimes walk with a cane. But I always went there, we ate and we did stuff and they went on all the rides and different things. And we did that every summer for quite a few years when I was young.
This might sound like an odd question, but do you think of having hemophilia or going through all these physical challenges, do you think there's anything positive about it?
It's hard to say. Positive,
I don't know. Just anything good come out of it?
I can't say that anything good came out of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Did it make you stronger, more? Do you feel like you were more sensitive? In that way?
Yeah, it made me.
Certainly didn't make you any healthier.
No, but it made me stronger in the fact of how to face things and how to do things. That it sort of taught you that you're going to have to overcome this and that, and don't be afraid to do these things because, you know, this is like a setback. Don't let it set you back.
So in that way, you think
it encourages you to be stronger. Yeah,
a certain strength of character that you
right.
might not have had
right.
without these challenges.
Sure.
So you don't feel these challenges really destroyed you in some ways. They made you
no.
in some ways more stronger.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Because I feel, you know, I don't feel like I was cheated or anything. Yeah, I wished I was born healthy, but in the same time, my life, I've gotten through this much of it, and I've did fair. I won't say good, but I'll say fair.
Why do you say fair and not good?
Well, good, I'd be happy, 100%. I'm not happy 100%. I'm, you know, I have good days and bad days.
And the happiness, the 100%, what does that do to, do you think?
I don't know, just make you happy, I guess. I just think it would make you feel better. I mean, I've done lots of stuff, so what can I say?
Yeah. Could you work most of your adult life?
I tried to, but I couldn't.
What happened?
My left hip went, and I was really having trouble with it for years. I just got it replaced just a couple of years ago, but I was having so much trouble with that. That kept me off doing a lot of work. I wouldn't get around so good, and I'd get in and out of the vehicle and be a hassle, getting in, getting out, and walking distances and things like that.
So you were really disabled by the stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. So what did you do with yourself? What? How did you fill your time?
I read books and stuff, but I had greenhouses. I raised plants, and I got the kids and my wife and stuff, and we took them to the flea markets, and we had like two or three trucks. We sold plants for a few years, raised our own flowers, herbs, plants, did all that kind of stuff. And I enjoyed it. No money profit-wise, and it was like you'd make a little bit, but it wasn't worth doing, but it kept us busy and stuff, and I thought we could make money doing it, but it didn't happen.
Mm.
But it was 7 days a week. It was a lot of work. But
yeah.
It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the plants. I enjoyed growing things. And flowers that bloom beautiful and stuff. I learned all that. I read books and studied and figured out how to make things work, and it worked.
Do you think it's affected your value of life in some ways? You know, of appreciating what you have?
Oh, yeah.
You do. In what way?
Well, you know that everything you got and you earned it, you feel good about it. And, you know that you didn't start with a silver spoon in your mouth like some people. So you know that you've done all the things that they've done, but you've done it the hard way. You know what I mean. Nobody just handed it to you, so you appreciate it much better. And it's just like the kids, I tell them, work for it, work hard. You'll get there someday. Whether they do or not, you still got to try.
Are your kids nearby?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it's affected how you are as a parent, having had all these physical challenges in life?
Yeah.
In what way?
Well, I think it made me learn that to appreciate the kids and stuff, to appreciate they're healthy and that they, you know, try to help them by realizing I didn't have the same physical abilities they have. That's the only thing.
And so how did that affect you as a parent?
Well, it didn't really.
But just
makes
you
feel better. It just makes you feel
I see.
Feel
that
better.
Your kids,
they're all healthy and strong, and I did something whenever I can to help them, and I can even help them even though I'm not healthy. Mm-hmm. All the time, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what about in your marriage? Do you think having these physical challenges has affected your marriage? I mean, no.
Not to me. My wife doesn't seem to mind. She's been real good. She's been real good. Every time I'm sick or every time there's a problem, she's been right there. And I tell her, you know, go home. Don't spend the night when I was at the hospital and at the rehab center. She was there every night, sleeping every night there.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her many nights, go home. Just, you don't have to come. You don't have to visit me. Take a couple of days off. She wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? She really been good.
Yeah. If you had a grandchild with hemophilia, if one of your daughters said, Dad, he's got hemophilia, how do you think you'd feel? Or do you think you'd have any thoughts for your daughter?
Oh, I'd just say, take him into the Boston hospitals and have him checked out and follow what they tell you for advice to keep him healthy and strong. That's what I tell them. I tell them what I did, but I'd also tell them, go with the modern ways,
mm-hmm.
because that's your best options.
Mm-hmm. Would you have any advice for how they should bring up their kids, given that the kids have hemophilia?
That I don't know, because I don't really know.
I mean, anything that your parents did for you that you felt was helpful or wasn't helpful, let's say.
Well, they didn't let me deliberately get hurt on things that I probably would have, put it that way. Things like that, physical things that don't climb ladders and things you shouldn't be climbing, because if you fall, you're going to really be in trouble. And other things like that, anything that would be dangerous to hemophilia. That's about the only thing, the physical stuff, I'd say.
So you think that parents really should watch out for their kids in that way?
Right.
You know, because the other side of it, parents worry, is I don't want to make my child afraid of himself.
No, but they say the hemophiliacs have what they call the daredevil syndrome in them. That means they try to do everything because they're told not to do it.
Right.
And because other kids do it. And that's always going to be a challenge. So you're going to have to watch any little kid that has hemophilia, because he's probably going to do the same thing we all try to do. Take risk. But sometimes when you're young, you don't know what a risk is and what a risk isn't. Everybody else is doing it. Climb up the ladder, go up there, go do this, jump off that thing. Then you hurt your leg and you don't know why you hurt your leg, and all the other kids didn't. But that's part of the hemophilia and understanding it.
But somehow, as you were a kid, whether you hurt your leg or not, you were up doing that stuff the next minute anyway.
Right, right.
Yeah.
First chance you'd get, you'd try to do it again. I don't know why, it just was in you to do it.
Mm-hmm. Chris, is there anything that I haven't asked you that would you think would be useful to just get down on this tape?
No, I don't really know. Offhand, it's hard to take everything in at once and to remember everything.
You've had a lot of health struggles lately in the last few years.
Right.
I mean, my goodness, you were in the hospital rehab for how long recently?
Right, 8 months.
8 months, and that was mostly with your liver disease. Is that the main problem now?
Well, it started out as a heart infection.
Uh-huh.
And they said then I had liver disease, and then I don't know what else. Two or three different things. I had some internal bleeding in the esophagus. Was so slowly, say they said it was destroyed. Then there was something else I was bleeding internally they couldn't find. So I don't really know.
Yeah, a lot, it sounds like.
There have been a lot of things,
yeah. But you're sitting here in your house today.
Right.
You know, do you have any thoughts for doctors and nurses or social workers just about what's helpful for someone or not in dealing with so many health challenges?
Well, I think it's good that people get involved and talk to the patients, the people that are sick, and try to help them. You know, I mean, just as they do, though. But to talk to them, and I think it's helpful.
To talk.
Sure.
Not just to say, how's your liver, or how's this, but more how we're...
Right, in general, find out about their life, and a little deeper than just the surface.
Yeah.
I think that helps people understand, feel better about themselves.
How have health practitioners been with you?
Has it been very good.
Very good? Overall, you feel it's good?
Yeah.
Did you have any crisis around your at all when the HIV or Hep C infections came up? Did that change your relationships with doctors and nurses?
No, I had thought they were going to be afraid to touch me or to, you know, shake hands with me or anything. And they didn't. They shook hands and they intermingled just like anybody would, any doctor would.
Mm-hmm.
But I had thought they would be, you know, put rubber gloves on, put their hands out and say, yeah, you stand over there while I talk to you. Because I was afraid because of all the stuff they had said, that everything was so contagious and everything was so deadly that they didn't, at first the healthcare workers didn't know what to do and wear gloves, and then they were worried about the needles and things and everything else. And I was afraid the doctors and other people would, you know, shun me. Somewhat.
But it sounds like that wasn't your experience.
No, I thought they would, you know, hold it against you, saying, oh, this guy's probably gay, or this guy probably got it because of this or that. And I thought, maybe they would think that, you know what I mean, and like, stay away from you, like. But no, they weren't like that. The people were nice. They always were. They were always friendly, and they were real professionals.
Did it change your feeling about did you change political, did the whole infection business or take the factor or not take the factor, did that change your attitude politically to the government, to the pharmaceutical companies, to your doctors?
No, I was disappointed that, like everybody was, to hear that they knew the factor was bad and yet they kept pushing it and selling it and letting people use it, and that should have stopped way back at the beginning, and the government didn't do its part either, but I didn't hold that against them either. I said, this is the way of the world, because big business always thinks of themselves. People, they sell these cars and people get killed in them, and they'd rather hire their lawyers to fight the suit than to stop making the cars because they're making so much money. And that's the way it is.
So you're not someone who's blamed the world or blamed...
No.
The government or...
No.
That hasn't been your experience.
No, I don't think you can blame them. You break the government down. They're only people. They can only do what they can only do. And yeah, there's a few that don't do the job right. You can't blame them all for the one or two guys that didn't do right or people that didn't do something. The big companies are more to blame than the government, I would think, you know, where they have to start, and they knew what they were doing.
And did you change your attitude toward medicine at all?
No. I still take whatever medicines I need, and I don't worry about the side effects. We always think about it, saying, well, what about this? What if another thing? Like now they have the mad cow disease, you know. And if that gets in the blood, that could be a problem. If ever, but who knows? Right now, chances look very minimal, if any.
Yeah.
But there's always something that could bloom up. Whatever you think won't happen, there's always a chance it could happen.
Chris, did you ever pray that you didn't have hemophilia or wish you didn't have hemophilia?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You did?
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I always prayed that I'd be cured of it, or that I wouldn't have it. I don't know, just, you know, always wanted to be healthy. But then after a while, you know, you just have to deal with it, live with it, you know. But I guess everybody must have prayed that they, you know, wouldn't have it or didn't be born with it.
But then at some point you stop praying for that because...
Yeah, because you know that you're stuck with it, most likely, and you're going to have to realize to deal with it instead of hoping for something that might not be possible.
I don't think I have any more questions.
No more questions? Oh, gee.
Because I think we really covered most everything that I hope to cover.
Right.
My biggest question is there anything that you think I should have asked or that you wanted to speak to in this?
Not really. I think in general my life is similar to a lot of hemophiliacs in my time zone, you know, my age and everything, that had to deal with very similar things. I mean, I can't speak for them because I don't know, but I can imagine by what I've done what other people would have had to go through.
Well, I want to thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
I want to thank you a lot. And I, you know, I look forward to you reading this transcript
right.
And, you know, sharing your story with other people.
Right. It isn't a curse. It's a... It's something we have to deal with like anybody else.
It isn't a curse.
No.
As much as you might pray that you wish you didn't have it,
right.
You don't feel it's a curse.
No.
What is it?
It's like just a draw. Like you say, 10,000 people are born. One has this, one has that, and one has this. Just that there are going to be so many people in the world, and that's what makes the world go round. Different people. Why are we born white? Why are we born black? Why are we born blind? Why are we born, you know, with different infirmities and illnesses? It's just that, I guess, the percentages, and you happen to be one of the ones in that percent group that was unlucky or whatever.
That's it's just part of life.
Part of life, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we'd all wish we could take back to the beginning of our life and set it the way we would want it, but that's not been done.
Not yet, anyway.
No, so I think we just got to deal with the way it is. Some people, you know, deal with it better than others. That's the only difference, I think.
So if you had a mom come to you and say, oh my God, I just found out my son has hemophilia, what would you say to her?
I'd just say...
Or a dad.
Right. I'd just say, you know, the same thing I said before, that just it's still your child and it's still going to make your life happy and just deal with the times when the illness is... come up and, you know, do the best you can. Seek a bit of professional help whenever you can to make it easier.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Chris, I was saying, so you only had two brothers, actually, who died, and you were saying, no, four. So
yes.
I knew about Georgie and Bobby, who had the kidney problem on
yes.
the tractor. What happened with the other two?
Junior, my oldest brother, he died of internal bleeding, I think it was 1990. And Francis died a week later, in 91, or it was vice versa, I'm not sure the dates. And he had meningitis, and he had passed away, but they had bleeding involved with the hemophilia. And that's when they died, they were right.
How old were they?
Franny was like 44, and Junior was like 55.
They weren't using the factor at that point
they,
in their lives?
They were, yes.
They were?
Yes. But they, my oldest brother was very weak. He only had one kidney and stuff. So, you know, through his life, he was always on crutches and stuff. And he had a hard life. And my other brother, Francis, well, he used to like to drink a little bit and stuff, and I don't know. He was kind of reckless. He had a wife and a couple of kids, and stuff. And we used to say to him, take it easy, don't do this, don't do that. But he worked hard and he raised animals and stuff. And he got sick one day and they told him it was sciatica or something in his back, and he kept having trouble with it and stuff. And then finally they said it was meningitis. And then by the time they diagnosed that, it was just too late. He just couldn't pull through. So, I don't know.
So unclear if that was actually hemophilia related.
Yeah, I don't know for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the real losses that you remember from the hemophilia,
right.
The two, that
right.
When you were young, yeah.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to get that. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
One more thing to ask,
yeah.
Chris, and that is, Chris, what about death? God, I've asked you, four of your brothers have died as young men or babies or teenage young boys. Has this affected your view of death? And you've dealt with life-threatening situations. What do you think about death?
Well, what I think about death is it'll come to you eventually.
Come to all of us, I hear.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about it. I'm not afraid. The worst thing I'm afraid of is, like I had said before, is to my family to miss me or me to miss them. That's the only thing that kept me going when I was facing death a while ago.
Yeah.
That's when all I kept saying is, I don't want to go any place. I want to be with my family, and I know they want to be with me. And that's what I don't want to leave.
Yeah. But you say death doesn't frighten you.
No.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, I don't think it's anything more than going to sleep and napping out, just like, you know, you won't know. When the final time comes, you'll just close your eyes and be tired and go to sleep, something similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you'll see after or what'll exist after, you know, in your body, in your mind, in your soul. But I believe in God and everything, so hopefully there'll be a heaven for us.